All right, good evening, everyone. This is Rochelle Wilhite, designated broker for Best Choice Realty. We're going to be talking about staging and photography and marketing remarks, which is kind of a fun topic, actually. So we can talk about that tonight and hopefully get you better prepared to manage the listing once you have the listing, or if you do have to remarket the listing because you're not getting a buyer for it. This course should help you and give me some good ideas and tips and tricks. So when we're talking about staging for success, there's different variations. There's different ways we can talk about staging. We're going to go through a few different options. Number one, you can obviously give some pointers and attempt to stage on your own, which a lot of our brokers do at Best Choice Realty. They give tips to the seller, and then the seller then follows through with the tips, and it saves a lot of money. Number two, there's what they call light staging or vignette staging, which doesn't cost as much, where you can utilize a lot of the same items that the seller has already in the property and just maybe bring in a few added pieces or move things around. It's what they call vignette staging. And then there's a third option, which is full staging, which is a vacant home where you have it staged, and we're going to talk about that as well tonight. So you have kind of three options. There's even a fourth option, which I've seen a little bit of, but I don't know if it's been as successful here in Washington as in other places, but there's what they call virtual staging, which is an interesting concept to look at, but for the most part, we're seeing a lot of one, two, and three being done very well for success when it comes to staging. So the importance of staging is you have one chance to make a good first impression. And when you're staging a home, buyers are able to visualize how the home will meet their unique needs. If you have a property that is not a typical floor plan or layout where buyers have a hard time visualizing where their furniture would go, this is a must-do item that you should not discount or think, oh, I can get away with not staging the property. You may also want to look at the properties that have sold or have gone pending in the area, which hopefully you've done already because you've done a good CMA. But if they look like they have been staged with professional staging, you may want to go with the third option, which is to hire a professional stager to take all of the furnishings out that the seller has, and when it's vacant, bring in some new furnishings. Obviously, there's costs and risks and benefits with each option. Properties that are not staged and they have some unique layouts, they won't sell unless they're priced accordingly. So you may have to make the adjustment with the price if you decide or the seller decides, no, I really don't want to stage my property. If all the other properties are staged and yours is not, you can make the adjustment to the sales price or the list price and then not stage. I mean, I have been in properties where they've taken that approach. So it really is based on, price, stage versus the competition, and also looking at the seller's ability to stage, not to stage, and thinking about the overall plan and what will be the best situation for the seller. Homes priced at or below fair market value will attract more buyers. That's something we've already discussed in other classes. So, having these options, you can really make some adjustments when you're talking about what I call the do-it-yourself listing broker plan, where you stage. You want to walk up to the home and look at the curb appeal. And there are some simple tips and tricks for getting the curb appeal to be what we call staged. I would advise the seller to trim some trees and shrubs, maybe clean and put some flower beds, if we need to, or even just some planters on the front porch. Clean and keep the walkway and the entry and driveway clean. It's really that first impression. Even just, I had I think it was a $2.2 million property in Normandy Park, and one of the things we did, it was actually a listing we took over from another company, and the other company wasn't able to get it done for almost a year. The property languished on the marketplace, and we brought in a stager, and with my just walking through the property, one of the key things I gave the seller advice on, it was one of the things that set me apart from the other competitors I was interviewing for the listing for. The competition was not giving them tips of some helpful, easy things that they could do to prepare, you know, their curb appeal, because it was an interesting layout. Obviously, it needed staging because the other listing agent did not stage it. And we went in there with a full marketing plan, 6% listing agreement, offered to help and assist in providing a professional stager to consult with the seller and advise them on what needed to be done. And the seller also took into account, my partner and I, what we were saying about some of these tips, you know, trimming the trees, cleaning the flower beds. But the one thing that obviously always makes an impression on me was the door color. The door color was like a 1990s, it was kind of a baby blue. I remember the color because it's like, there was sometimes the carpet. In fact, I think they had baby blue carpet as well. So it just kind of, when you walked, from the moment you walked in the front door and you walked through the house, it was like this 1990 baby blue feel. So one of the things that I pointed out to the seller right away was, have you thought about changing the color of your front door? And he was like, no. In fact, nobody suggested that. And I said, you know, the reason why I'm suggesting that is because, you know, it really says, you know, when you're walking through and you don't want to change the carpeting out, because it was nice carpeting. It was well taken care of. They barely lived in the home. It had a very nice pad. It was in great condition. But there's just too much baby blue. And so we ended up changing it to a different color. And we got so many compliments on the color we chose for that particular home and how it really made the home pop, and it, you know, blended really well with the surroundings, and it was much better than baby blue. So this is an example of a simple thing that a seller can do to stage it for success. The property languished on the market for almost a year before we took it over. We, working doorbell, cleaning the outside light fixtures, backyard, really think of the backyard, especially in the summertime, think of it as an extension of the home. Added square footage, and staging will make that home appear larger. So let's say you have a condo, and it's only a 1,000-square-foot condo in the heart of Belltown, and if you were to extend that patio out that comes out on the condo and put some nice, you know, some outdoor furnishings, it extends it out. Some of those balconies are like, you know, 100 square feet, you know, really nice big balconies. And if you put some patio furnishing, the barbecue out there, it really can extend the square footage. Now, not really literally on the MLS listing, but visually, and having that buyer appear, you know, interested because they have some additional space, they can go out even though they don't know. Sometimes the rest of the year is not so good weather. During the summertime, people really are excited about properties that really think of the patio as an extension of the home. And it's making that space appear bigger by adding some furnishings out there on the patio. And that goes for properties at homes as well. In the spring and summertime and early fall, you know, I always want to make sure that the backyard shows really well and that patio is an extension of the home. Light appearance, so again, I'm still on the do-it-yourself or kind of staging as I'm going through, touring with the seller, and they're asking for my strategic advice on how to best prepare their property, the lighter and brighter, the better. So a lot of times, sometimes sellers, for privacy reasons, will want to keep their drapes closed, want to keep their blinds closed. And so when I get them, you know, where I need them to be, especially for photos, and I make sure that the window treatments are open during the daylight, so we really are taking down some of the sunscreens as needed, replacing the light bulbs. I don't know how many properties I've been through that's like a first sign. If you don't have light bulbs, you start to look at what other things are not maintained on the property. So get your sellers to replace the burnt out light bulbs, leave the lights on in some of the darker rooms when there's showings, playing music. All of this is staging. It's keeping the TV off during the showings, really depersonalizing. What I mean by that is I look at a wall of, you know, for example, hallways. For the most part, hallways should not have, if they're small hallways, they should not have anything on the walls. I have an older 1960, 1950, 1970. Some of those hallways are like really narrow. They're like, you know, 36 inches. And by having things on those hallway walls, it will also make the room or the space seem smaller. So take all of that stuff off. Less is best. But in some of the rooms, when you're trying to utilize some of their staging, a lot of people, the longer they live in their property, the more they acquire, and that tends to happen. And so really looking at a wall and getting the seller to recognize that one of the things that is very common in person, you know, a stager comes out, they will take down or advise that the seller take down or eliminate at least 50% of the items on that wall to give the appearance of being lightly staged or staged. So if you have a wall full of like maybe 5 to 10 different photos and the seller asks me, what do you think about this? What do you think I should take? Well, certainly I want to make the space seem larger. And although I love your, you know, your family photos up there, I would recommend that we, you know, maybe only have one instead of the 4 or 5 that you have up there. We just kind of really change the space up, and it will make the space appear larger. And that usually resonates with the seller, and they usually take my comments to heart. It should look like a model home, so it needs to be cleaned. If you need to pay a couple $100 or have the seller pay a couple $100 to steam clean the carpets, it's worth every penny. A couple $100, $200, $300, $400, even $500 to clean the carpets could mean a difference of $5,000 of a carpet allowance. When you put the home on the market, you get the buyer's feedback, and the buyer is saying the carpet needs to be replaced, or we don't like the carpet. Having something clean goes a long way. There's less of a chance that you have to replace. Also clean the floors, the windows, light fixtures, baseboards. I mean, to pay it for a cleaner, again, that goes a long way. It shows that it shows a lot better. And we have recommendations of great cleaners that can help you or support you if you have questions about that. Eliminating odors, keeping air fresheners maybe in some of the closets that smell a little bit, and emptying out the trash cans. I mean, I'm very upfront with people. I have a very strong, you know, I smell things, and so if I smell something, I'm going to be very upfront with the seller, and they appreciate that. I wasn't as outspoken as I was initially when I took listings, but now you got to have a thick skin, and they need to recognize that you're the professional that lists these types of properties and markets them for highest value, and, you know, they should take your comments to heart, even if it's kind of a hard nut to swallow. It's those listings I took where I was not transparent or I wasn't confident in my abilities to market the home to sell, where things languish on the market longer or I run into problems with buyer feedback and then having to do adjustments. And anytime you do adjustments, it's going to cost the seller money. So it's easier to do those adjustments early before you go on the market than after you go on the market. Have the seller recognize that every room has a purpose. Overcrowded rooms are going to appear smaller. Every room should direct the buyer's eye to a focal point, and that's just interior design 101, where you should have a focal point. So in a bedroom, you know, what's your focal point? Is it the window? Well, then open the window, open the shades, maybe have the curtain to frame the window. If that's the focal point, that would be something you'd spend some money and do. In a bathroom, for example, I went to a property, and the property had one of those old blue, had blue tubs around and a blue toilet. So my advice to the seller was to take the toilet out, put a new toilet in. Doesn't cost much for a new toilet, a white one. Leave the blue. It was kind of a very popular color nowadays, but it was original to the house, and it was in great condition. And I said, leave the tub, and the surround looks fantastic. Let's just put in a shower curtain and play off of the blue on the tub. Save you, you know, $1,000 to $3,000 to replace the tub if it's functioning and it works well, and we don't have, it doesn't scream blue, you know, on all the appliances and things in the bathroom. Again, my focal point was the new toilet, because that's the first thing you saw when you walk in the bathroom, and the shower curtain. It's not this glaring oldness that we're seeing with the toilet and the tub being the same color. So we are updating partial and getting maximum value out of that idea. Update the furniture and accessories. If there's a worn-out couch, for example, and you're going to keep the couch, throw a new slipcover on it. IKEA sells them for really cheap. IKEA sells throw pillows for really cheap. There's other Crate and Barrel. There's other places you can go get some throw pillows. I used to have a garage, a part of my garage. Eric hated it because I always had the section of the garage that was taken up with bins of accessories where I had, you know, different colors of accent pillows and slip covers for sure, bedding and towels, and neutral colors for a lot of the large items. So if I had like a large lampshade, neutral color, so that I could really just throw in some accessories that I had in my garage when I listed a property. I didn't go crazy with a ton of furnishings because I wanted to utilize my sellers, but it's that once where they're exhausted, they've just done tons of prepping, and they just don't have the money to go and afford to go buy a new slip cover for their sofa or a, you know, a queen size bed cover that's neutral. That's what the kind of stuff that I had in my garage. I had probably about 5 to 10 different shower curtains, so I could use them as needed. And then some plants. So I had some easy way to really make the home appear healthy, and some plants really helps to make it come alive. If you use themes, I love themes. In fact, my house, I love themed rooms or themed. They're fun. In kids' rooms, you can sometimes get away with it, but you really want to appeal to the greatest amount of buyers. And so taking the themes down, making them more neutral, will actually appeal to a greater range of buyers. Obviously, fixing things up are super important. So I kind of talked about, if you were to do it yourself, those are the things that I would kind of look for. There's many examples, problems that I sometimes see with staging. The dining area is so small, and they use the dining area as like a workstation, as well as the desk and the computer. You really want to remove what is the purpose of the room, and if that's the purpose, go with one purpose. Don't have two purposes for staging. Make sure that it's clearly, you know, what is the purpose. If it's going to be they're going to use the room as like a office, then stage it as an office. If they're the type of household that's going to use it as a dining room, then stage it as a dining room. Don't have two different purposes for each room. So that happens a lot. Also, bedrooms can be very cluttered and old, worn-out bedspreads and bad lighting, no artwork, simple artwork above the bed, getting rid of the clutter, adding some light. So like I had two light fixtures for nightstands. A lot of people don't have lighting in their bedrooms, or the builder didn't build master bedrooms with lighting. The seller never put the lighting in. You could easily get around that and throw some decorative pillows on the bed, and you've got a staged room. Also, living rooms become very cluttered. They use storage spaces for different things, bad art. So you can remove all the art. You can accessorize with very, very, you know, different pillows, taking things down off of the walls and just making it clean. Kids' room can be very cluttered with toys. I advise that they pick up the toys and put them in a bin, put them in the closet for the most part. Rearrange some furnishings sometimes in the kids' rooms makes it appear larger. And master bathrooms can be cluttered with a lot of things on the counter. So taking away personal items, replacing the shower curtain, which almost, I'd say 75% of the time, they're dirty. They need to be replaced. And then a lot of cleaning and accessories can really add staging to a bathroom. So those are things you can easily do. A welcome center is a nice touch. Some of our top listing agents actually have a nice little letter that they have created from the seller. The seller writes a little history about the property, a very nice little seller letter. They put that on the welcome center on the counter with some waters and some takeaways, a copy of the flyer and your business cards, and it really adds a personal touch to the home. So it makes it appear like a vacant staged home by having that welcome center. I've always got lots to talk about with staging, so I'll move on to the other option for staging, which is to do vignettes. There are companies that will come in, utilize, they'll consult. They're few and far between. In fact, we have quite a few agents on our team that have accessories in their garages or have done staging or actually have been licensed to do interior design work, and it just really depends on the type and the scope of the work, on whether they could take on your project or not. But if you have a need for vignette staging, give me a call or send me an email, and I can put you in touch with a few different ideas. They're on our resource guide, and it's going to depend on what you need done. But it's not as much as you think. Sometimes it just helps if you have somebody that has that design eye for interior design to come out on your listing appointment or do a follow-up when you're getting the listing agreement signed, and you pay them a consult fee and have them be the bearer of the bad news or giving them the ideas of how to improve their property. If you don't have an eye for it, it can mean, you know, a few $100 you spend for a consult and a few accessories to really give that seller confidence that you have what it takes to be successful and you have the tools to stage. That's a pretty easy way to do it. I've done that because Eric maybe get rid of all the stuff in my garage. And in a property I did in Spanaway for a friend of mine, I ended up paying for a vignette stager, and he did a great job. I just rented some of his personal pieces. It was a vacant home. He didn't stage the entire property. It was like 2,500 square feet. We staged approximately the kitchen, the family room, the living room, and I believe one bedroom. And it didn't cost me a lot, but at least gave a flavor of what could be done with the property in that layout, in that open concept floor plan. And got an offer in 30 days, and in Spanaway at that time of the market, that was a great deal that we took. And I think it had a lot to do with because it was staged and because it was marketed so well. So staging does help sell, and it doesn't cost that much. When you start getting into the upper end, or I would say areas of our marketplace where you look at the competition and they're all having professional stagers come out, then you're looking at about 1% per $1 per square foot. So let's say, and that would be a monthly fee. So let's say I had $2,500 square foot home, it would cost me around $2,500 for the staging. And then they charge you an in and out fee and then a nominal rental fee. So you're looking at, you know, it could cost you a few thousand dollars for the staging, but if you're able to get multiple offers and generate a higher return on that investment, it's worth every penny. The trick is finding the company that will match the style of the furnishings that you're looking to do and the company that is not overly booked. I just have to remove one of our companies from this past weekend because one of our agents went on the resource guide, found a staging company, and the staging company had committed to come out and they got too busy or something happened and they're no longer able to go out there. So unfortunately, we'll have to remove them from the resource guide, but there are other staging companies that are out there that you'll need to probably call around. Make sure you give yourself at least a 1 to 2 week notice or lead time on that so you can establish a relationship with that stager and make sure that you have the right staging furnishings available for your particular listing. But when you're talking about multiple offers, you know, a few thousand dollars is not that big of a deal. When you're talking about a commission, say, of 3%, that's something that you may want to talk with the seller about their expectations of what it's going to take to sell. And you either, you know, help out with that, give them I've done it where they pay it up front, and then I, at the close of escrow, then I give them a credit. I've done it before like that. They pay it for it, and you market because it needs to be staged, and you sell that point. So there's a lot of different ways that staging can help you get the best bang for your buck. But like I said, there are three ways: do it yourself, vignette or light staging, or full-on staging with a professional staging company. And all of those are going to have, you know, costs and benefits and risks associated with it. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is photos, and I'm running out of time. This is taking longer than I expected. But as far as photos, I usually take some initial photos of the home as I tour the first time, and I'm just going through and I ask the seller permission to do so. I want to, you know, as I'm going through the property, I just want to take a few photos, obviously so I can think about the property and how to best market it, because I have to write about your home, and it's easier if I have kind of a quick tour of the home or take a short video of the home when you're there. But obviously I'm going to replace those photos. Those are not my marketing photos. Those are the photos that I take with my, you know, cell phone camera. What I find very disturbing in other companies, not so much in ours, but I've seen other people, other agents taking cell phone pictures and actually making that their actual marketing photos. So if a client is paying you a lot of money, you want to make sure that you're spending some money on photography. That is an expectation. I would say if we surveyed all of the sellers that we currently work with, that is an automatic expectation. When they hire an agent, they expect to receive quality photographs of their property. So, and these photos you're taking initially is just to gather the information and help you remember the property, but and maybe adjust the lighting or bring in some additional things that might help sell the property. But you know, don't use your original photos. Go ahead and I take several photos of the front for various reasons. We have bad weather some days, and sometimes my front photo actually is the one I will use and maybe modify it a bit. Or it will be one that I use if we change something in the marketing remarks and we want to remarket the property. I may use one of my photos of the front. I'll take different angles. Where the professional photographer will probably capture that home at the moment, maybe a couple different angles, but I want to have a few different options. So, so make sure that you take some pictures on your own, but also have a professional go out there. When you take the front photo, take it so you see the door. That usually is a tip. And obviously the light is hitting it. Sometimes the professional photographer, I'm able to do a better job on my front photo because I'm at the property so many times that I might capture it in different light where the lighting or the sun is hitting the front of the house in a better way than, say, when the professional photographer went out there or the time of day. So if you get some good front photos, sometimes your photographer can actually work with your photo. Or we can switch it out as the time goes by. Other things to consider with is consider your focal point and the proper angles. That's why professional photographers will actually do a better job. And I usually go with the professional photographer. I'm usually there attending the photo shoot so that I can move things like, you know, the dog or the cat litter box out of the way, or the trash can out of the way, or the knife block out of the off the kitchen counter. To really clear off the counters. I want to make sure my photographs look clean, and then I'll just replace the items after the photographer gets done. But having those personal items, sometimes even on the counter in the kitchen, and having the photo taken, your eye's drawn to the item, not to the actual property or the home. We're trying to sell the house. We're not trying to sell the knife set on the counter or the really nice cuisine art or the Keurig that's on there. A couple of things, not bad, but if you have a ton of accessories on your countertops, your eye's drawn in the wrong way. So think about that when you're taking your photos or you're following the photographer around. I think that's it for photography. And then I want to go to the marketing remarks because I see a lot of agents doing an okay job. I would say the industry in general, if you were to give it a grade, A, B, C, D, and F. I would say overall the agents, even in our office, I'd say our agents in our office are doing a better job than most, but there's always room for improvement. But overall the industry, in my opinion, gets probably a D plus or a C minus when it comes to marketing remarks. I think that people really do a poor job. So hopefully tonight you'll at least know what to do or what not to do. You want to determine who is your target market. That's number one. For making a marketing description, who are you trying to target with your words? Number two, what are the best features of this home? Sometimes the seller will tell you when you're doing your initial interview about what they like about the home, what drew them into making an offer, why did they purchase their home? Some of those features of what they liked about their property, that might be what are the best features, and that's what I'm marketing or that's what I'm writing about in the marketing description. Number three, what are the benefits of these features? Because it has this, what are they able to do? You know, because it has, you know, an unfinished basement, this makes it a great investment property to add additional value. That is much better than just saying it's 2,400 square feet and there's 1,300 square feet of unfinished space. That doesn't really do anything unless if I'm able to connect the feature with the benefit. In my marketing description, that's a win-win. That's getting you the right type of buyer for your property. You also want to use number four, another key point, is keywords that motivate. I have a sample. If you want to send me an email tonight, I've got two flyers, one that has words that help first-time home buyers and words that help that resonate well with up, you know, people that are moving up. I have two columns, and I have this on a nice Word document that I'm happy to send you. If you want to send me a quick email, I'll forward those two documents over to you. And then also number five, keep fair housing laws in mind. There are some things you want to avoid. Walking distance, avoid that. That's a violation of fair housing. It'll be flagged. Some of them are not caught, but it is a violation. Instead of saying walking distance, replace it with minutes to elementary school. Minutes to elementary school means the same thing as walking distance, but yet we're appealing to the handicap accessible. We're appealing to people that are elderly. We're appealing to those types of people or individuals. So make sure you keep that in mind. You can't say family. You know, family. This property is great for a family starting out. You can't say that. That's a violation of fair housing as well. So keep that in mind when you're writing your marketing descriptions. I know some of you have really good experience and background in marketing, but we have to stay within the confines of the law on the fair housing. When you make the marketing description, identify features and benefits. These are some good ones. Cul-de-sac, quiet cul-de-sac with no through traffic. So that's a benefit. It's a benefit and a feature together. Split bedroom plan offers privacy and comfort. Well, it's a benefit. Some people like the split bedroom plan. But what is the feature is the split bedroom plan. The benefit is the privacy and the comfort. You get where I'm going. Price below comparables. You could say that. Obviously, a lot of them are price below comparables now, so that might not work. Save gas, short distance to shopping and schools, or minutes to shopping and schools. Again, I see a lot of people saying, you know, minutes to shopping and schools, but what's the feature? What's the benefit? Again, think about the feature and the benefit and try to get better at writing. One of the things I want you guys to avoid is great. That is I just want to cringe when I hear that. Great home, period. I'm like, wow, they really can describe the property. Great is not so great anymore. Let's think about other words to describe the property. So think of, you know, some other things that motivate, and those are the things that will help you sell a home. Or it might even hurt. Some people, the way they write will actually hurt them in getting a buyer. Keywords that motivate. Landscaping. People like landscaping. They like, you know, granite used to be a key thing, but now granite's not as popular as it was. And now we have different, you know, materials that are actually more popular than granite. So you may want to avoid that now. That might actually hurt you. By including granite countertops. If everybody has gone to a different type of countertop, they've gone to concrete or some really different type of material, that's not going to help you sell the property. Gourmet, that seems to help when you have a gourmet kitchen. By saying gourmet kitchen, well, what is gourmet? Gourmet can mean a lot of different things to a lot of people, but that could often help rather than just saying kitchen. Well, you can say gourmet kitchen. It actually adds to the description of the kitchen. A handyman special. You know, if it is a handyman special, that actually could help you find the right buyer. Again, who is your buyer? Who are you targeting? In this ad for a small two-bedroom house in a neighborhood where many families live, which of the following is improper? Two-bedroom home near playground and senior center. Again, that would be fine. Small, cozy home in quiet neighborhood. Again, that is fine. Ideal for couple or single professional. That is not okay. And if you just say no children, that is not okay. So think about that. If you're violating race, color, religion, sex, handicap, familial status, or national origin, you're violating federal fair housing laws. There are seven of those laws that you need to be aware of. I think we covered the things I wanted to talk about. I have some good photos, and I have lots of good photos. I have lots of great photographers at various prices. I've been given a lot of some best of the best lately in the last 2 months. We've interviewed over 10 photographers locally to understand their packages, their pricing, and they offer quite a bit of incentives for using their services. And if you're thinking, I maybe haven't research this. Maybe I need another idea on a photographer. You may want to just reach out and ask me or Carly who we use for photography, because we've been able to save off save quite a bit of money by trying some different companies. And then also make sure you're entering good directions to the property and really using the agent-only remarks as a way to instruct agents on what kind of offers you're looking for, or where the lockbox is placed, or just some information to help the buyer's agent sell your property. Those are the kinds of things you would want to put in the agent-only remarks. And like I said, I have some samples, some supplemental things I could send you tonight if you want to send me a quick email. I have a sample journal of our home, and I have some sample marketing remarks. And there is a book you can buy at the Northwest MLS that's called the Ad Writer, and that has been really helpful if you struggle with how to describe things or properties or how to kind of write something. You may want to get yourself a book, an Ad Writer book. For many years, I struggled with what to say or what to write, and now I don't even need it. In fact, I lent it out and never got it returned. It's such a great book. So if you want to, get yourself an Ad Writer book if you struggle with how to write marketing remarks, or learn from some of the best things that you see. Oftentimes what I'll do is I see really good stuff, I'll swipe, I put in my swipe file, and I'll modify it. You know, I'll use maybe, oh, this is a good way to describe this property. I don't take verbatim what they said, but I like to take some good ideas and create, obviously, my own marketing remarks for the property. But I've got 17 creative, effective marketing remarks that I could send you as well. So hopefully this helps you. Good luck with your business. We look forward to next week. We are wrapping up the listing series. I think we've got one, maybe two more segments of this. And then I'll look for some feedback on whether we want to continue to have listing conference calls or if we want to go back to buyers. But hopefully this has been helpful. Make it a great night, and we'll talk soon.